Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, please feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. I'm very excited about my upcoming healing weekend. I'm going to have the chance to meet some new wonderful women who I've been in touch with over the years and re-meet some of our wonderful women who have been with me at other healing weekends. This year, the healing weekend's in a beautiful hotel in Irvine, California, and it's going to be the week before Easter, so that won't be interfering with the holiday. And people can come to get healed, because that's what these healing weekends do. We're going to have wonderful workshops, wonderful speakers, therapists will be there, all kinds of counselors. And it's a chance to stand up and tell your story and not be judged in any other way than empathy, compassion, and understanding. One of the major problems that we as straight wives have is that people just don't understand what we're going through. And they minimize it, and they can't understand why we can't just get over it, having no clue about the emotional disruption in our own lives this causes. So the healing weekend really starts people off healing. Many women come back a second, third, or even fourth time, because healing is a process. It's not something that happens overnight. It's something that takes time. So whether you've been to a healing weekend before or not, this weekend, like I say, will just be amazing. It will get you in touch with many other women who will be lifetime friends for you, as they have become for me. And so Once again, if you're interested, you can go to my website at gayhusbands.com. And when you get there, there will be the link for the healing weekend. I have a guest that I'm waiting for this evening, also from another part of the country. So there might be time problems. I'll be waiting for him. But in the meantime, I want to go over some issues that affect all of us, and I know that some of our women are really struggling with right now. And I wrote an article a few years ago, and it's saying, Figuring Out the Resentment of Gay Husbands and Who We Are. And I thought it was a really interesting article, and it has to also do with control that many of these men exhibit in our relationships and why they do it. And after that, I have a wonderful article about 20 signs that you're being controlled. So I think a lot of us can relate to this, and I'll go through the reasons why in a few minutes. It says, last month, and this is going back to 2013, last month I wrote about my new epiphany that gay men don't think straight. I had an overwhelming response from readers thanking me for this new discovery. It really cleared up a lot of things for those women so they could stop the self-blame of why their marriages failed or are failing. I would also like to reiterate for the record that although people like to use the quote, it takes two to make or break a marriage, that does not apply to our type of marriages. In our marriages, it only takes one person to make it break, namely your gay husband. Sadly, a number of you are still taking the responsibility for this. Why should you absolve yourself from this responsibility? Here are some reasons. As women, we go into marriages with certain hopes, dreams, and expectations. We are looking for partners who can truly be partners in every sense of the word, based on the perceptions from the observations that we've grown up with. The partners we seek out are men who want to be with us on a physical, emotional, and sexual level. While your husband is playing the role of straight husband, he tries his best to make sure that he is all of these things to you. He has observed straight men from the time he was a child, and as he grew older, he did his best to imitate them in order to keep away any suspicion that he might be gay. And by the way, this is not a blame thing on my part. It's an understanding thing. When you want to be someone other than yourself, you do your best to study everything, from walking, talking, and laughing, so you can play the role just like any other actor. Some of these husbands are even homophobic. I used to think they were putting on an act to throw us off guard. Although this is true for a percentage of gay husbands, it isn't true all of the time. Some of these men really are homophobic. It's due to their self-hatred towards those who remind them of what they are. They are the first ones to say the word faggot when they suspect or find out someone is gay, which is usually offensive to us, their liberal wives who are pro-gay. They have no empathy for men who are going through the struggle. They work so hard to pull this off the straightness that they have no sympathy for weaklings who give into that other way of life. You know, an authentic gay life. They really are homophobic. Well, until they are in a sexual act with one of those faggots. Yeah, I wonder what they say then. So when we add up all the clues, we breathe a sigh of relief to know that our husbands are straight, not gay in mathematical terms. Because we've figured the formula out, married plus father plus homophobic equals straight. Getting back to my point, once we feel confident that our husbands aren't gay, we start wondering why our marriages seem off track. It doesn't seem to start with anything major, but rather little things. One of those little things that changes early in the marriage is sex. Side note, when women come to me and I ask them, how is your sex life? The common response is, well, our sex life is good. Almost all of those women who tell me that their sex life is good or normal have very limited previous sexual experience. Without fail, after they meet a straight man, they are kind enough to write back that their sex lives are great because they finally understand what making love with a straight man is about. Sorry, I had to mention that before I forgot. Anyway, as sex starts waning in your marriage in a short amount of time, you start wondering why the frequency, which was never that frequent to start with, has changed and why your husband seems to be pulling away more and more from you. At first, you ask yourself gently, honey, is everything okay? Is there anything bothering you that you want to talk about? He quickly responds, No, not at all. Why are you asking? At that point, he is seeing a waving red flag and says to himself, uh-oh, danger ahead, shark, shark, shark. In other words, is there something that he's done to tip you off? Remember, when someone is living a lie is tightly wrapped up, he can't afford to allow that package to unravel in any shape or manner, at least until it falls apart, lest it falls apart. At this point, Gay is the last thing on your mind, but is still the first thing on his mind, as well as wondering if he's let any hidden information slip out by mistake. Did he accidentally say something in his sleep? Was it a glance at a cute guy that lingered too long? Another point I'd like to make, as naive as some of you still are who are reading this, and I say naive, not stupid, so please don't think I mean anything other than naive. Some of your husbands have continued to have gay sex from the early days of your marriage. It's not like there was a time limit on the I do part. He said to you in those vows, like, I do for today, but I don't know about the first year, 5 years, 10 years. He really did hope that male sexual attractions would fade if he promised to love and cherish you. But he had no clue either that loving you would not be enough to stop them. You can trust me when I tell you that I know that some of your husbands were having sex with men shortly after your honeymoon, and some even on the honeymoon. That's the sad part. How do I know? Because don't forget, I counsel hundreds of gay men each year and help them come out to you. As time passes on in your marriage, you notice the big chill. It's now definitely directed against you. There are only so many headaches, toothaches, and stress aches that any one husband can have. When you start suggesting that maybe there is something that he doesn't like about you, well, you just opened his escape hatch. Yes, that must be it. He quickly retreats for a moment by saying, don't be silly. But he's smiling as he says it. Why? Because he knows now that he can use that hatch to start his escape plan of blaming you. The next time that you try to bring up the subject, he rejects some little thoughts. They start out with, honey, why do you always think about sex? I don't think it's normal to have sex on your mind all the time. Take a giant step back. The weeks go by and you approach it again. Honey, I've noticed you've put on some weight. There's something that doesn't look quite right about you. Maybe you have to start exercising. Take another giant step back. Now it's been several months. You've lost some weight. You've had your hair colored. You went and bought sexy nightgown. By the time you put it on, he's fast asleep. You try to nudge him, but he's making loud snoring noises, and he totally turned the other way, just in case you're checking out his eyes, which are usually squinted shut or wide open while he's doing this. Well, take one more giant step back. Do you think he's avoiding you? No, not at all. Like you, he has a mental calendar. Yours is saying how long it's been since he last had sex with you. At the same time, he's counting how many days that it's going to be before he has to do something with you as his straight husbandly duty. He's not avoiding you. He's just building up the courage to do something with you that he dreads or is at least distasteful. He knows you can only take so many steps back before he has to make you feel as you are moving forward. Or maybe you'll start talking to friends and mentioning them to them that you think something is wrong. Now he's going to fool you. He'll suggest some drinks or pot so you can both have some fun. After all, it's been weeks or months. Isn't it time? You're so happy that you do everything you can to make the mood a real one. Quiet candlelight, dinner, bottle of wine, kids tucked away, romantic music, and tonight's the night. After waiting for 6 months, it's your time to shine. All is well with your world. You can take 5 giant steps ahead. Yay, everything is normal again. Those silly thoughts in your head can finally disappear. Whatever it was that was paused is on full speed ahead now until you try to touch him again. This is where the resentment sets in. He took care of you, didn't he? Didn't he prove he loved you? Didn't he prove he was straight? And now you want more? What are you, a nymphomaniac? Why do you always have to think about sex? What is wrong with you? Who told you that marriages are like this? What are you, 18 years old and you need so much sex? Uh-oh, take 4 giant steps back. Now here's the irony of this whole situation. You think you feel bad for feeling rejected? Your gay husband feels the same way because he feels just as rejected as you do when you make him feel inadequate because he can't please you by having enough sex. No matter what he does, it isn't enough. You are not being supportive of him when you are finding fault in all of the things he's trying to do to be a good husband to you. In fact, if you ask these men that you are divorcing if they thought they were good husbands to you, the overwhelming majority of them are going to say yes, and in their minds they were. Some of them were good providers as far as providing a home and an income. Some of them took care of the house, making sure it was clean, because you didn't exactly do the best job, did you? Was it ever clean enough? They were good companions to you. They loved shopping and fixing up the house. They were very sociable with friends. Okay, maybe they did seem a little different when you were alone, but living with you could be frustrating, couldn't it? You think you're right all the time. You're very pushy when it comes to many things, but the one thing that you're most pushy about is the sex thing. Okay, let's talk about pushy for a moment, since most of us have been accused of that. I guess it won't shock you when I tell you that the majority of these men are very controlling. Surprise! No, it wasn't just your husband, ex-husband, it's most of our husbands. Is this a coincidence? Of course not. Gay husbands are so controlling because they live in the fear of their secret coming out long before they are tired of living in the closet. They can't control their sexuality, but they can sure try to control you. To a man who is controlling, anything that can mess up his well-controlled secret life is a threat. By your questioning him on these things that just don't add up, that makes you pushy. He does not need you to upset his apple cart. That's where more of his resentment sets in. With the resentment often comes the anger. Did I mention to you that some of us were married to rageaholics? These are men who shout you down to shut you up. In time, we just shut up. We stop asking. We become modern-day versions of those Stepford wives, dutifully doing whatever we think we have to keep the peace. Think about it. When you went into marriage, who were you? Are you still that same woman, or did your marriage stunt your emotional growth? Were your expectations in your marriage fulfilled? Were you able to get nourishment and praise so you could grow and reach your personal and professional goals? Was your husband focusing on your happiness for real, or what he perceived to be your happiness? Did you become depressed? Did you feel stuck? Did you ever have to justify your marriage by making excuses such as, no marriage is perfect, or it will get better, when you knew there was no way of things getting better? Did you keep trying harder and harder, thinking that if you cleaned a little better, your husband would finally love you enough? Did you take responsibility for his unhappiness by believing those subtle little messages or not so little subtle insults that you were the problem in the marriage? You weren't attractive enough. Your body had bad odor. You were too boring in bed. The problem is we're working in the dark. Even when we suspect the truth, we can't put the big picture together. Look at it this way. If you were told at your job that you have to put together 5,000-piece jigsaw puzzle in order to get your next paycheck, at first you may look at it as a challenge. But you had no clue that about the three missing pieces. Then you can imagine how your frustration would set in as you spent hours each day searching over and over again for something that you could never find because you had no idea it was missing. That's how most of our marriages are, jigsaw puzzles with missing pieces. We keep searching, looking to make something right that's always off balance. The more we question what is wrong, the more frustrated our husbands get because in their minds, they are doing everything right. When I told my ex-husband I thought we should go for therapy after a couple of years into the marriage, his response to me was, "We don't need therapy. You are the one who is unhappy, not me." This perception isn't far off from many of your situations. The gay husbands are complacent. Maybe they aren't thrilled, but they aren't ready to jolt. They can get by, especially if you don't keep up that annoying sex stuff. And once you continually shut up in that department, you'll learn to shut up. Feeling a little frustrated? Let me ask you this. If you had a husband who hungered for you, made you feel being with you was the best part of his day, planned fun events with you, sat next to you with his arm around you, or walked to you holding your hand, told you that he thought you were beautiful, and after dinner he wanted you for dessert, do you think he would have turned out differently? If you had a husband who applauded your successes and encouraged you to maximize your potential without worrying that you might say the wrong thing to the wrong person, namely revealing secrets that he was hiding, don't you think he would have been a different, you would have been a different woman? Funny, we usually end up saying that we don't really know the men we married. Here's the true irony. We don't really know the women we were destined to become because we were much too busy becoming the women we thought our husbands could love more if we did more. Put your missing pieces back in the pile. Now that you can solve the puzzle, don't worry about it anymore. Start worrying about who you missed out on being for so many years and get moving. Life is still out there for you to take. Grab it and run straight ahead. I have to be honest with you, I just love that article. I think now I'm going to actually put that in my upcoming newsletter. And I got a little note that my guest was very sorry that he was unable to be here. He had a commitment that's lasting longer than he thought. And I will certainly forgive him because he's a wonderful guest and have him rescheduled here. So in the meantime, I'd like to go over another article before I call it a night, because I think this one is very important also. 20 Signs Your Partner is Controlling. And I think this is such a great article. It's in Psychology Today. And it said, in my years as a psychologist and advice columnist, I've long since learned the stereotypes don't apply when it comes to controlling partners. Toxic relationships can sneak up almost on almost anyone. And controlling behavior on the part of a partner knows no boundaries. People of any age, gender, sexual orientation, or socioeconomic status can be in controlling relationships playing either role. Many of us visualize a controlling partner as one who openly berates everyone in their path, is physically aggressive, or constantly makes overt threats or ultimatums. We picture the grumpy bully who belittles every server he or she encounters, or commands their partner how to dress from head to toe. While those signs are indeed troubling, there are many additional signs that might show up quite differently. Controlling people use a whole arsenal of tools in order to dominate their partners, whether they or their partners realize what's happening or not. Sometimes the emotional manipulation is complex enough that the person who is being controlled actually believes that they themselves are the villain, or that they are extremely lucky that their controlling partner puts up with them. Whether controlling behavior leads to more severe emotional or physical abuse or not, it is not a healthy situation. If you notice more than a couple of these signs within your relationship or your partner, take it seriously. And if you are concerned for your safety and want to learn more about possibly abusive relationships or patterns, check out thehotline.org. So here are the signs. Number one, isolating you from friends and family. It may start subtly, but this is often a first step for a controlling person. Maybe they complain about how often you talk to your brother on the phone, or say they don't like your best friend and don't think you should hang out with her anymore. Or they try to turn you against anyone that you've used for relying on support besides them. Their goal is to strip you of your support network and thus your strength, so that you will be less likely or able to stand up whenever they want to win. I have to say, in my marriage to my gay husband, that was exactly how it was. It was a constant battle every time my family was around. And I think he just waited till they got there to really start, you know, heating up the action. And it worked, because it was only a matter of months before they would say to me, we're not coming here anymore. If you want to see us, you'll have to see us outside the house. We can't take the fighting that goes on. And he was a rageaholic, so it was very uncomfortable. The next is chronic criticism, even if it's small things. Criticism, like isolation, is also something that can start small. In fact, someone may try to convince themselves that their partner's criticism of them is warranted, or that their partner is just trying to help them to be a better person. Or they may try to rationalize that it's not such a big deal that he or she doesn't like the way they dress or speak or eat or decorate their house, and they shouldn't take it personally. But ultimately, no matter how individually small a criticism seems, it's part of a constant dynamic within your relationship. It would be very tough to feel accepted, loved, or validated. If every little thing you could use improvement on your partner's eyes, then how are you being valued as a true equal, let alone loved unconditionally? Number three is veiled or overt threats against you or them. Some people think that threats have to be physical in nature to be problematic, but threats of leaving, cutting off privileges, or even threats by the controlling person to harm himself or herself can be every bit as emotionally manipulative as the threat of physical violence. It's not unheard of for the partner being controlled to feel stuck in a relationship, not out of fear that they themselves will be harmed, but that their partner may self-destruct or harm themselves if they were to leave. Other times, a person may feel threatened by losing their home, access to their children, or financial support if they leave a controlling or abusive partner or are left by them. Whether or not the threats are genuine, it's just another way for the controlling person to get what they want at the expense of their partner. That's an issue that comes up with a number of our women when they threaten, when they tell their husbands they want to end the marriage. And the husband says that, if you leave me, I'm going to kill myself. And to me, this is so emotionally manipulative, because if a woman leaves, and 99 out of 100 times a man does not kill himself, but for that one time that he might, the woman feels that she'll be responsible. And I tell women, if you're in this situation, what you must do is tell your husband that he really needs to get, you know, help, that you can't take responsibility if he wants to kill himself, and that you're going to call a therapist or you're going to call a psychiatrist to get him, you know, medication so these thoughts will stop. But you cannot let it manipulate you, because somebody can't hold you prisoner that way. But they do. I know that. Number four, making acceptance, caring, attractions conditional. I love you so much more when you're making those sales at work. I don't feel like being intimate with you, but if you keep working out and lose a bit more weight, you'll be more attractive to me. If you can't be bothered to make dinner, I don't even know if I'm going to get what I'm getting out of this relationship. You'd be hot only if you spent more time on your hair. If you'd actually finished college, you'd have something to talk about, my friends, and wouldn't feel so left out. Now, it says, though, these are some examples and more blatant than others. The message is still the same. You, right now, are not good enough. It's a common denominator theme of many a controlling relationship. Next, an overactive scorecard. Healthy, stable relationships have a sense of reciprocity built into them. It's inherent that you will look out for each other and not bean count every little time you do something to help the other out. If your partner is forever playing, keeping tally of every last interaction within your relationship, whether to hold a grudge, demand a favor in return, or to be patted on the back, it could very well be their way of having the upper hand. And it could be downright exhausting to be on the other side of it. Number six is using guilt as a tool. Many controlling people are skilled manipulators at making their partner's own emotions work in the controlling person's favor. If they can manipulate their partners into feeling a steady stream of guilt about everyday going-ons, then a lot of controlling person's work is done for them. Their partners will gradually try to do whatever they can not to have to feel guilty. Often, this means relenting and giving up power of their own dissenting opinion within the relationship, which plays right into the controlling person's hands. Next is creating a debt you're beholden to. Controlling people may come on very strongly in the beginning with seemingly romantic gestures. But upon closer inspection, many of these gestures, extravagant gifts, expectations of serious commitment early on, taking you for luxurious meals or an adventurous outing, letting you have full use of their car or home when they're not there, can be used to control you. Specifically, they create an expectation of you giving something in return, or a sense that you feel beholden to that person because of all they've given you. This can make it more emotionally and logistically difficult to escape when further warning bells go off. Number 8 is spying, snooping, or requiring constant disclosure. A controlling partner typically feels that they have the right to know more than they actually do. Whether they keep their snooping secret or openly demand that you must share everything with them, it's a violation of boundaries from the get-go. Perhaps he or she checks your phone logs into your email or constantly tracks your internet history, and then justifies this by saying they've been burned before they have trust issues, or the old standard, if you're not doing anything wrong, then you shouldn't mind showing me. It's a violation of your privacy, hand in hand with the unsettling message that they have no interest in trusting you, and instead want you to take on a police-like presence within your relationship. Next is overactive jealousy, accusations, or paranoia. A partner's jealousy can be flattering in the beginning. It can be arguably be viewed as an endearing or a sign of how much they care or how attached they are. When it becomes more intense, however, it can become scary and possessive. A partner who views every interaction you have as being flirtatious, is suspicious or threatened by multiple people you come into contact with, or faults you for innocent interactions because they may be leading someone on, may be insecure, anxious, competitive, or even paranoid. Additionally, when this perspective becomes ingrained within your relationship, they are very likely attempting to be controlling as well. Next is not respecting your need for time alone. It's another way of sapping your strength, making you feel guilty for time you need on your own to recharge, or making you feel like you don't love them enough when you perhaps you need less time with them than they need with you. It's natural that two partners may not automatically have the exact same needs in terms of time alone, even if they're both extroverts or introverts. In healthy relationships, communication about those needs leads to a workable compromise. In controlling ones, the person needing the alone time is made out to be the villain or denied the time altogether, taking away yet another way they can strengthen themselves. Number 11 is making you earn trust or other good treatment. Of course, you will trust someone if you've dated 5 years or more, that you trust the person you've been seeing for more than you trust the person you've been seeing for a month. But some amount of trust should be assumed or inherent within the relationship. For instance, as mentioned, you shouldn't always have to detail your whereabouts or every moment of every day. Nor should your partner automatically have the right to access your emails or text or internet search history. If trust or even civil treatment is viewed as something you need to work up rather than default setting of the relationship, the power dynamic of your relationship is off kilter. The next one is presuming you're guilty until proven innocent. Again, a controlling person is often very skilled at making you feel that you've done something wrong even before you realize what you did. You may walk in the door to find them already angry about something they thought, found, decided in your absence, and they may keep evidence of your wrongdoing to a point that you may feel they've got a whole case against you, even if you don't quite understand it. From where you put their favorite coffee mug to whether you had lunch with a coworker without them knowing, you will always be assumed to have had criminal motives. Why do they do this? To use it as justification for punishing you in some way, are preemptively trying to keep you from making that error again, keep you acting in ways that they want you to. The next one is getting you tired of arguing so much that you'll relent. And this is one that I'm very familiar with. While some controlling people like to exert their influence under the radar, many others are openly and chronically argumentative and embrace conflict when they can get it. This can be especially true when their partner is more passive and the controlling person is likely to triumph every disagreement that comes up just because the partner being controlled is more conflict avoidant in nature or simply exhausted from the fighting they've done. Like I always tell my women that the way it used to work in my marriage is that my ex-husband would become very angry and volatile, never in a physical manner. He never once physically put a hand on me. But he mentally just would be very horrible to me, calling me all kinds of names and berating me. And, you know, I called it, you know, he would ask me a question, and if I would answer it and he didn't agree with it, that's when he would start screaming at me. And this even went on long after our marriage. many years after our marriage, he would do the same thing. He'd ask me a question, and if I gave him an honest answer instead of the answer he wanted, he would start calling me all kinds of dirty names. Of course, not being in the marriage with him, I could hang up the phone. It was a lot easier than when I was living with him. But, you know, it was exhausting to keep fighting, and I don't like conflict. You know, I like peace. I like harmony. You know, he liked conflict. So it was a problem because sometimes I had to stand up for myself, and he would just knock me down verbally. And eventually, as I always tell women, he would learn to, you know, shout me down to shut me up. And that's what some of these men do. They shout at you to shut you up so you won't be talking or asking or requesting anything from them. Number 15 is making you feel you don't measure up or you're unworthy of them. Whether by subtly making you feel less attractive than they are, constantly reinforcing their professional accomplishments as compared to yours, or even comparing you unfavorably to their exes, controlling people often want you to feel grateful that you're in a relationship with them. This creates a dynamic where you are more willing to work harder and harder to keep them and make them happy. A dream for someone who wants to dominate a relationship. And that's what I always say about our women. We always work harder than everybody else because no matter what we seem to do, we can't make our husbands happy. So we keep running around in that circle of crazy trying to make something work that just doesn't work. And then internalizing that we're the ones at fault. Tensing, teasing, or ridicule that has an uncomfortable undercurrent. Humor and even teasing can be a fundamental mode of interacting with many long-term relationships. The key aspect is whether it feels comfortable and loving to both parties. In many controlling relationships, emotional abuse can be thinly veiled as, "I was just playing with you. You shouldn't take it personally." And in one fell swoop, not only does the original criticism stand, but now an additional criticism of you having the wrong reaction has been levied. And basically being told that you don't have the right to your own feelings, a classic move by controlling people everywhere. Next is sexual interactions that feel upsetting afterwards. An abusive or controlling dynamic within a relationship can often make its way into the bedroom. Sometimes things feel not right even at the moment, but other times it's a pattern of feeling uncomfortable after the interaction. Either way, when you feel constantly unsettled about the goings-on with your sexual relationship, it is a sign that something's wrong. Number 18 is the inability or unwillingness to ever hear your point of view. You may notice that you are constantly interrupted or that opinions you express have been quickly forgotten or never been acknowledged in the first place. Perhaps the conversation is always so overwhelmingly dominated by your partner that you can't remember the last time they asked you a meaningful question about how you were doing and actually listened to the answer. Think, too, of whether you've ever tried to give them feedback about how their behavior makes you feel and whether they're actually able to take it in or whether they've dismissed it out of hand or perhaps even blamed you for having an invalid opinion. 19 is pressuring you toward unhealthy behaviors like substance abuse. Undermining your fitness goals, constantly tempting you with cigarettes when you're quit, and not respecting your decision to have only one drink rather than three. These are all ways that controlling people can try to thwart your attempts to be a healthier and stronger person. Since controlling people thrive on weakening their partners, it's a natural tool for them to use. And number 20, thwarting your professional or educational goals by making you doubt yourself. Maybe you always assumed that you would go to law school, but now your partner is making you feel your grades weren't good enough to get in. Maybe you used to have a lot of drive to your own business, but your partner tends to think of your ideas as silly and you find you've lost confidence to pursue them further. Often a controlling partner has a way of using you as a secret weapon against yourself by planting seeds of doubt about whether you're talented or smart or hardworking enough to make good things happen in your life. This is another way they can take away your autonomy, making you more beholden to them and serving their purposes quite nicely. Recognize your relationship or your partner in these. Here are some next steps to start thinking about. So your partner is controlling, now what? So Anyway, there's a lot of great information here. If any of you would like either one of these articles, all you have to do is let me know, and I'll be happy to send them out for you. I'm really impressed by the writings of this other woman, doctor. And, of course, I'm impressed by what I had to say a number of years ago, which is still so relevant today. So, ladies, men, I'm going to cut our show short tonight since my guests could not make it. But I hope you learned something from the articles that I did read. If you would like a copy of either one of them, just write to me at bombk@aol.com, and I'll be more than happy to send them to you. I hope you have a wonderful week filled with hope, filled with peace, filled with happiness. Happiness is something that doesn't happen overnight. This was a discussion that came up in my support group, that after a year and a half, 2 years, why aren't people just totally on track? Because that's a totally unrealistic amount of time to go through your grieving. It's going to take time. But you're not doing it alone. I'm here for you and other wonderful women I can hook you up with who can help make this journey an easier one. So to all of my wonderful listeners, thank you. Next week we'll be back. And we're doing our summer series. We have some excellent guests coming up that are favorites of yours. Please join me again. Have a wonderful week, and love to all of you. Good night.